You're listening to the Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CJMQ 88.9 FM, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm William Crooks. Today's program begins in Ayers Cliff with returning Mayor Alec Van Zuyden, who was recently acclaimed to another term in office. He reflects on what it feels like to be back at the helm, rebuilding his team, and encouraging cooperation among councillors. He also speaks about preparing the municipal budget, guiding development, and preserving the village's small-town charm, not to mention a light-hearted story about the town's unofficial mascot, his horse Olympic. Then we hear from local weather watcher Andrew Retchless, who breaks down recent patterns and shares his long-term perspective on what residents can expect this winter. And we'll close inside the world of the Eastern Townships Wrestling Association, where organizer DJ Myers and filmmaker Damon Cox take us behind the scenes of a new documentary that captures the energy, spectacle, and community behind local pro wrestling. You're listening to the Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CJMQ 88.9 FM. I'm William Crooks. Today we hear from Alec Van Zuyden, the returning mayor of Ayers Cliff, who was recently acclaimed to a new term in office. In our conversation, Mayor Van Zuyden reflects on what it feels like to be back at the helm, the work of rebuilding his team, and the spirit of cooperation he hopes to foster among councillors. He talks about setting up new committees, planning the upcoming municipal budget, and managing development while keeping the village's friendly small-town character intact. He also highlights the importance of volunteers, the people he calls the heartbeat of the municipality, and even shares a lighthearted story about the town's unofficial mascot, his horse Olympic. Stay with us as we hear directly from Ayers Cliff Mayor Alec Van Zuyden. Mayor again, Mr. Van Zuyden. How does it feel?
It feels wonderful. It feels like I've come back home, actually. Really, really does.
You were elected by acclamation, sir.
I was, yeah. So I really wasn't elected, right? I was acclaimed. Nobody else ran, and then that was October 3rd, I was acclaimed. October 6th, I was sworn in. So I've been mayor a month early, I guess.
What were some of your first moves?
Getting ready to prepare the committees that have to take form for the next 4 years, whether it's CCE or the CCU or the volunteers, you know, all kinds of committees. And I had to wait to see who was going to be elected November 4th. We had four seats that were up for election. That's been settled, and so the next day, all my little documents were ready, and I sent them out to the now elected councillors to suggest, why don't we form the committee this way? You take this, you take that position. Everybody's got a presidency, everybody's got a vice presidency, and it seems to have gone very smoothly. Our first meeting is tomorrow night, our council meeting, and then our first public meeting will be the following Monday. So, it's kind of exciting, actually. Everybody seems very keen to go forward.
What are some of the challenges that Ayers Cliff is facing in the moment?
Well, we want to provide a horse to everybody, get rid of the cars. It'd be a really nice thing. Now, actually, some of the bigger dossiers are some development projects that are taking place, others that want to happen in the area. We need to look at that. We need to balance that with the gros bon sens. I've always said, je gère un bon père de famille. How to say that? Like a father. I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but let's look at the details, let's discuss them together, and let's strategize, let's put a plan forward, and let's roll it out. And that seems to have worked in my last 8 years when I was a mayor, or my previous 8 years when I was a mayor, and I think it'll work this time as well. I think it's crucial to give each councillor their, not only their responsibility, but their authority to make decisions. And so when we come to the public, it'll be the councillors that present their dossiers. It won't be Alec as mayor that presents the dossiers. It'll be each councillor, because he will master his dossier. He'll be able to defend it and present it to the municipality. And to me, that's what shows teamwork. Let everybody do what they're supposed to do. In the business world, we say, just do your job. So that's what people expect of me. That's what I expect of the councillors. And that's what the councillors expect of me. That's what I expect the municipality expects of all of us. So I think it'll work out well.
Would you happen to have an update on the big Medore residential project in Ayers Cliff?
I don't. I suspect I'm going to get an earful when I go in here tomorrow night. season, because now it falls on my desk. So I'll know where all the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed, but right now I don't have all those details.
Was there a big turnout for the election to elect the four councillors?
Yeah, well, they've tried to talk to me about it. I've as soon as I was sworn in, I just pulled back in conflict with anybody. I didn't want to contravene the ethics regulations. So people were kind of on their own to decide who they wanted to vote for. I didn't want to affect that, because you never know who you're going to work with. So it went very well, I think. There were, if I remember the numbers right, 1,035 people eligible to vote in a municipality of 1,277. And on most of the seats that were up for election, the people that came out to vote were about 380 up to 400, something like that. And so there's a nice participation. It could have been more. But there you go. The municipality, the citizens have spoken. We have the councillors that they want in place, and we're ready to go forward.
What are the next steps for you? There's a budget coming up, isn't there?
Potential of a new mayor, six new councillors, and we're going to bring in a budget in the next number of weeks. It's almost not reasonable, but be that as it may, for a number of budgets, whether it was the municipality or the issue, and our good term is there, and to discuss, we're on agreement, what has to be modified, what programs are we wanting to put in place, what will it cost, where does that fit into the budget. It's a lot of work as you come to the table after an election period, but it's been like that since whenever, and it looks like it's going to continue like that, you know, unless it changes at the Quebec level, but that's not going to happen. They have their own issues to deal with.
How would you distinguish your leadership style from former Mayor Simon Roy's?
I think Mr. Roy has forgotten more than I'll ever learn. Highly educated, great understanding and vision as to the stability, the foundational requirement of a municipality or a business or any structure like that. And I think that's what he's brought into play with the previous council. He's leaving the municipality in a much stronger position than we've been in for a long time. For that, kudos. I think I'm more the development side, not necessarily corporate development, but just development of the municipality. And so now we're going to have to balance those things, because we want to be here for the long term. We're a small municipality, and the province keeps dumping down regulations and requirements. We have to do more and more with less and less. And so our primary concern is not to jack up the tax rates and to do as much as we can with the little funds that we do have. But it's worked in the past. We've done very well. I think, again, Mayor Roy and his council has put us in a phenomenally solid position, and so we're just going to carry that forward.
Anything else people need to know?
Something people need to know. Our mascot is a horse. My horse called Olympic. Most of the kids in the municipality in the last 13 years have ridden him, and it's just fun to see. It's just something a little different in our town, but there you go. I would also say, and we saw it again on this last activity that the town had, the level of volunteer involvement is incredible in this municipality. And so we need to put a premium on that and see what we can do with those volunteers, because they're the ones that represent the municipality. They're the ones that are the heartbeat of the municipality. They're the ones that put the message for us. This is what Aerscliff is about. Y'all want to come? Come on over. This is who we are. And the volunteers do that. And we couldn't do it alone as elected officials. The administration couldn't do it alone. We need the volunteers, and there are a lot of volunteers. So that looks good.
How is the new elevator at the library working out?
Absolutely marvelous. That was funded by the provincial government. It is good. My wife happens to be the president of the library. She's thrilled with it. The equipment itself seems to move a little slowly, but I suppose there are rules and regulations and whatnot. But people seem happy with it. It's working well, and it's not an eyesore. So there you go.
That was Aerscliff Mayor Alec Van Zuyden discussing his return to office and his plans for the coming months. from reorganizing council committees and tackling the municipal budget to balancing new development with the village's unique character. He also spoke about the strong volunteer base that he says defines Ayers Cliff, calling them the heartbeat of the municipality. I'm William Crooks, and you've been listening to The Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CJMQ 88.9 FM. This segment was produced with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, helping bring community news and local voices to the airwaves across the townships. You're listening to The Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CJMQ 88.9 FM, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm William Crooks. It's been an unusually snowy start to November across the townships, and according to local weather watcher Andrew Retchless, it's only the beginning. Retchless has spent decades studying and communicating local weather, earning a loyal online following for his clear, community-focused forecasts. In our conversation, he explained why this year's atmospheric setup, with blocking patterns over Greenland and colder air pushing south, could bring a true old-fashioned winter. From steady cold to heavy snowfalls, Retchless says townshippers should be ready for a white Christmas and a long, active season for skiers and snowmobilers alike.
Okay, so I lived in the townships most of my life and grew up totally fascinated by the weather. My father had emigrated from England, so I think he was totally fascinated by the weather, and I was influenced by that. It's just been a hobby of mine since I've been a kid. Went to university, took a geography degree, and, did climatology in that, so it was, aligned with my interests. And Wallace was providing support to anybody who needed to make sense of the weather. I'm a weather communicator, not a meteorologist. I just study it and try and make sense of it. And I ended up, getting some side gigs from it. I helped the Eastern Township School Board for over 20 years, to try to decide whether to close school or not, which is not easy. And then when the internet came along, I started to blog. And then once Facebook got group pages going, I moved that over onto Facebook. And I've developed a following over the last 10 years of around 3,000 people who follow me regularly, but I think yesterday I had a reach of over 10,000 on the Facebook page. So people do look to me to try and make sense of the weather. And basically how I mean, it's not because I'm specialized as much as I know the townships, and I've been there all my life, so the big weather services, tend to sort of paint the weather in with broad brush strokes. But as you know from living in the townships, you can drive from one side to the other and see four different weather types because of our hills, because of where we are in relationship to the Green Mountains and the St. Lawrence River Valley, etc. This last storm is a perfect example of that, actually. So that's kind of how I became the weather guy, and I enjoy doing it. I do it for pleasure. That's not monetized at all. I do it because it's fun to share my passion.
How do you think the summer matched up to what you're expecting?
It matched up in terms of temperature. I don't think anybody anywhere expected to see that amount of dryness. I mean, in all the years that I've lived, in Magog and on Lake Levering, I've never seen Lake Memphremagog as low. So it was dramatic, in fact, how dry it was. But it's not the first time that's happened, and it won't be the last time that happened. And it wasn't because of any like major global warming shift. It's just that we got into a blocking system in the upper atmosphere that you don't usually see in the summer. You see that often in the winter. So we got stuck under high pressure, which was really great, really nice days. But we didn't get on the edge of the battle zone, as we call it, the ring of fire that usually brings us lots of thunderstorms. We didn't see that this year. So that was the surprise, I think. It was an anomaly, though, not a trend.
What does the summer's weather mean for this winter, if anything at all?
Well, what happens, what dictates our weather is really what's happening way, way off to the west in the Pacific Ocean with, you know, the famous La Nina and El Nino. And also what happens in the North Atlantic and over Greenland. So, you know, you hear everybody talking about polar vortexes and jet streams and what have you. And if the jet stream is moving along at a good clip, then we get all kinds of variable weather, up and down very quickly, changeable, warm one day, one week, cooler the next week. But when the jet stream gets kinked up and you know, sort of like a, you know, like the hood of your car would be if you hit a telephone pole, you'd get some bumps in it, you know, in front of your car and buckle. Well, that's what kind of what happens to the jet stream. So I mentioned earlier that this summer was, we got into drought because of blocking in the atmosphere. The jet stream remained quite, you know, buckled, and we got them to get buckled under the warm part of it and the sunny part of it, still existing. What we're seeing today for the 11th of November is exceptional for the East Coast. It's a deep trough, and it's going to freeze all the way down into North Texas tonight, probably. That's something you'd see in mid-November and January, late November and January. So this is because the jet stream is in a blocking pattern, and the blocking is in over Greenland. When you get blocking over Greenland, the storms come up the coast, like the one did last night. And so it allows cold air to sink down the middle of the continent and storms to form along the barrier between cold and warm, the Atlantic Ocean and the cold continent. Those are the winters we got in the 60s. You know, those phenomenal winters that everybody, old-timers like me, talk about, where you had, you know, 300, 400 centimeters of snow. And that's the indication right now. So that translates into lots of snow. And it's trending colder. Not deep freeze colder, but steady colder. So I looked at December today. There's not one day above normal average temperature forecast for December. And what we saw today, the temperature, you know, just hovering just below or above freezing, that's predicted right through to the end of November. So the places that have winter today, and then we're talking 20, 30, 40, 50 centimeters of snow on the top of the big mountains, this is what they'll see right through Christmas.
So what's it looking like this year for the skiers and the skaters?
Well, the skiers and the snowmobilers, it looks like a dream end of November and December. And I'm looking right now, I just called it up here, we're looking at, you know, minus fives, minus fours for highs in December, and minus 12s and minus 10s and some even minus 18s around Christmas. Now, this could all, look, long-range forecasting is a crapshoot, okay? But when you see these long-range forecasts, they are sort of indicating the general personality of the weather between now and, let's say, January 1st. And I just called up the European model snow forecast, okay, in inches for the next 45 days, okay? And the European snow forecast over the next 45 days is for exactly about that amount of inches of snow to be on the ground by January 1st, 45 inches. So to convert that into at 2.5, that's snow depth of close to 100 centimeters with no thaws. So that could change. You could get a storm that will bring us rain and we'll lose some of the snowpack. But the general personality and trend of end of November and December is for cold and snowy. What was predicted today by the long-range guys was predicted months ago. And I've been saying that on my weather page, that things are trending colder. Keep your eyes open for winter to snap hard around the 7th of November. And guess what? It was a little few days late, but it snapped hard last night.
How long do you think the winter will go?
Okay, so what tends to happen is what's on the ground tends to influence the air that's above the ground. So if you get a heavy snowpack year and you have snow all the way down halfway to the Mexican border. And usually when you get a winter like this, it gets cold in the middle of the continent. Well, that snow has to melt. So what it tends to do, it acts like an ice cube in a drink, right? It cools off and modifies the atmosphere above it. So that tends to stretch out winters a little longer into April. And so right now I looked as far ahead as I could, which is mid-February. And January is looking to be a typical month, slightly below normal some days, slightly above normal some days. If normal is not normal, it's average. Well, the average temperature in January is -8 for a high. So slightly above and slightly below is still cold, right? And you're going to be guaranteed to have a cold snap, right? 20 below or 25 below. But my thinking is winter will go hard like it used to in the old days. And I think we'll get into January, and then I think we'll get the traditional January thaw. And then we'll go back into a regular snowy winter. But just looking at the long range right now on the AccuWeather days, they're showing between now and January 1st, okay, so what do we got? That's how many days? Today's the 11th, so let's say that's 20 days, 19 days plus 31. So basically 40 days, they're showing 27 days with snowflakes. So that gives you a trend of an idea of how busy the weather will be. And there looks like 6 potential major snowfalls in December.
What's the big takeaway?
Well, I would say that if they're putting, so two things. Okay, anybody who hasn't put their snow tires on yet better get them on. Number two, if you've been playing the snow removal game thinking I don't really need to, worry about getting someone to do snow removal, if you're not up to shoveling a lot, take care of that as well, because you're better safe than sorry. And just hunker down, because it's going to be a good old-fashioned winter. That's all I can say. If I'm wrong, well, guess what? It won't be the first time.
That was Andrew Retchless, longtime weather watcher and weather communicator, sharing his outlook for the coming months. He's predicting a cold, snowy stretch right through the holidays, maybe even into April, and reminds everyone to get their snow tires on and line up snow removal early. You can follow his regular forecasts on his Facebook page, where thousands of townshippers turn for updates. For the Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CJMQ 88.9 FM, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm William Crooks. You're listening to the Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CJMQ 88.9 FM, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative. I'm William Crooks. Today, we step inside the world of local wrestling and meet the filmmaker documenting it. Ottawa-based director Damon Cox has spent the last 3 years following the Eastern Townships Wrestling Association and the Myers family behind it. I spoke with Cox, as well as ETWA organizer DJ Myers, during the group's wrap-up event, what Cox called their champagne shoot.
My name is Damon Cox. I'm living in Ottawa now, is where I'm from. I have been making films since graduating in 2002. I spent some time in Stansted, and that's where I got to know DJ and Doug, because I moved here in 2008 and had worked here for a while on down with Bashar Shabib, who was running Millie's Diner at the time. And then after that, I stayed in the village for a few years. And when I got involved with my friend Zeef Zhidik and Shazam Fest, that's where I met the Myers family and the ETWA. And we spent quite a bit of time working with each other, getting to know each other. And as time went on, eventually there were a few ups and downs that I was going through. And I remember the one day after doing some stuff with Doug and DJ, and I remember Doug coming and knocking on my door and say, "Hey, we've got a show in Weir Park." And he's like, if I throw you $100, can you come shoot it for us? And that's when I started documenting and following the Myers family and collecting footage with them. And after a few years, in 2000, I guess it was around 2013, we made a decision to move away from Stanstead to Ottawa, and that's where I set up base, and that's where I've been and working and building my network of fellow filmmakers since 2016. And then after a few years there of me growing and working on honing my craft and my skills, in 2022, so it was the first Stanstead show after COVID, Doug reached out and asked if I could come and film the show for him again. Because he needed camera operators, and I said sure, and that's when I brought my friend Jesse Palangio, who has been my cinematographer for a couple years in Ottawa, and we came down and we filmed the show, and Jesse was just like, absolutely, he's like these guys, they've got flair, they've grown so much, like he was really impressed with the professionalism and stuff like that. And I said, yeah, I've known them and I'm really close with the family, and I've been really close friends with DJ and Doug, and developed a very close relationship with their dad Donnie, whom I admire quite a lot. And after that drive home after that show, I said, I'd really like to tell this story. I'd like to share the story of this family and the legacy and what's developed and their impact on the community and other surrounding communities as well, and the wrestling community as a whole. And after that, we decided to approach them, and I brought on board my co-director, Pat Mulligan, and through our organization, Melangio Pictures, we started documenting the family and conducting interviews with the wrestlers and how they've impacted and how they've grown over time. And and that's where we are now. We're finally, after 3 years of collecting footage and having archives of 30 years of wrestling footage, we're now in that process of beginning to craft the story. This weekend has been the what we like to call the champagne shoot, the final shoot of 3 years of work.
When can people expect the final product?
So we're now entering into the next phase, which is post-production. So that is the most tenuous phase and most intensive phase of documentary filmmaking, because that's where the actual story is going to be coming together. So we intend on doing that through the winter, and the ambition is to be prepared to do a premiere in June of 2026. We already have a trailer available at melangio.com, which is our website, where people can see the trailer, and they can also check us out on Melangio Pictures as our Instagram handle, where we have been sharing the progress of the project and content as well. So,
are you coming at the documentary from a certain angle?
Well, this is where I wish Pat was here, because he does sum it up quite well. Essentially, this is more than just a wrestling story. This is a story about family, and it's a story about community. And that's the angle that we're aiming at, is taking that very universal approach of family and relationships and community, and especially the impact in rural communities. I grew up in the country. I grew up in small towns, and Stanstead is very near and dear to me because it was very impactful for me, and I still have many fond memories of my involvement with the community here. And to see the growth of this family and the growth of the ETWA means a lot to me, because I feel that collaboratively with Doug and DJ and Donnie, had a little bit of an impact on that and help lifting up what potentially could happen and could be, and it's now here. The professionalism and the collaborative spirit and how much support they have in the community and the things that they do with fundraising shows and that sort of thing is really important. And that's the story I want to tell, is that grassroots evolution and how it relates to the village and how it relates to the community as a whole, and there's that sense of it's a Canadiana story, and cross-border appeal as well, because of how they also do shows in Vermont as well, that's the angle that we're aiming for is that sense of family and telling the family story with a little bit of flair there as with the wrestling. This is a big deal for us. This is our biggest project for Melangio Pictures. We've done a few narrative shorts and a few small mini documentaries and working with other filmmakers and other projects and stuff. So this is one of our biggest endeavors, and it's been an incredible journey. And to get to this point is a lot of sleepless nights I've had, and so I'm so happy to be at this point, and it's amazing how things shape and how they change over time. When we first started this, it was just really about telling the story of this family. And then that's the amazing thing about documentary filmmaking, is as time goes on, the story evolves. Learning about Donnie's cancer diagnosis and seeing the kids grow, a few more years, and seeing Doug and DJ grow, and seeing, at the beginning, just like their entrance going from, old TV towers that they built and constructed, which was already amazing in itself, and to have invested in more equipment and more gear and how that's evolved. And I've evolved as a filmmaker, as a part of this project as well. And that's one thing that I always try to make a point and keep reminding myself, is that you never stop learning and you never stop growing. And that's been the greatest part. And I look forward to see how much more they're going to grow over the years, even after we're finished this film and we release it in June.
Next, I spoke with organizer DJ Myers about the significance of the wrap-up event.
Okay, so today what is happening is we're having a luncheon to basically, it's a wrap-up party for the documentary. I've got wrestlers people that were trained or wrestled for my father over the past 30 years showing up here today at Sunnyside just to get together, to shake hands, to say hi to Donnie, to say hi to each other, because what's happening is film crew is here to capture some interviews for a little bit, tidbits for the documentary, and giving everybody an opportunity to say something before the directors and the editors take what they have, the content, and go to Ottawa and chop it up. So this is like that last minute effort to get as many voices and pictures and videos of individuals to basically contribute their opinions and how they feel about what the Eastern Townships Wrestling Association did for them in their lifetime, or how they look back at their time with the wrestling club and share their opinions, and share their views.
All right, DJ, so who's coming today?
So one of the founding members of the Eastern Townships Wrestling Association who's shown up today is Dave the Animal Tear. Dave was a longtime resident of Erskliff, and he was a big part of helping my father Donnie Myers and my uncle Clifford Cormier establish the basically the systems on how they operated the shows. So Dave's coming, he's an old-time friend. Also some local folks from Stansted who wrestled for Donnie over the years, like Billy Lashman, who wrestled under the moniker of Bobby Paninsky. And of course, I'm talking about wrestlers who wrestled for Donnie in the 90s, like early 90s. And of course, that also shifts into characters like Mark Shelton, the Elvis impersonator, the gospel singer. He's coming up today because Mark Shelton had, in fact, actually wrestled for my father for close to 20 years, using different characters, such as a masked character by the name of the Archangel. And then he also portrayed a character. He went by Mark the Rhino Shelton. So Mark's coming. Who else? The Iron Viper, another individual who's from the local area, from the Eastern Townships, Stuart Phaneuf. He's scheduled to be here today to come in and say hi to everybody. Stuart was a key component to the late 90s, like let's say from 97 to 2001, he was 2002 even, he was a very big part of the roster. Who else is coming today? A longtime referee, a guy who refereed for my father for, I bet you it was 20 years before Richard moved to Ontario, but Richard Wilson, he's coming in today. He's driving in from Cornwall, all the way from Cornwall, just to visit us for a few hours today, and he's gonna drive back. Well, to be honest, the last time I saw him was at my grandmother's funeral, which is, you know, not very, great time to meet up and talk about old time stories. You know, you're kind of mourning. So it's nice to have Richard show up. Basically, everybody's coming here to the Sunnyside Gymnasium to celebrate over 30 years of the Eastern Townships Wrestling Association, and they're coming in to pay homage and get their face and their opinions shared on the documentary.
That was documentary filmmaker Damon Cox and ETWA organizer DJ Myers speaking about the new film that celebrates more than 30 years of grassroots wrestling in the townships. The project, co-directed with Pat Mulligan, is set to premiere in June 2026, with a trailer already online and Mellagio.com. ETWA's next live shows return to Stansted's Sunnyside Gym on February 21st and April 11th. For the Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CJMQ 88.9 FM, I'm William Crooks. That was the Pulse of the Eastern Townships on CJMQ 88.9 FM, produced with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative. Today we heard from Ayerscliff Mayor Alec Van Zuyden, who spoke about returning to the office, reorganizing council committees, and celebrating the volunteers he calls the heartbeat of the municipality. We also checked in with Andrew Retchless for a closer look at how our weather is shaping up this season, and we finished in the ring with ETWA organizer DJ Myers and filmmaker Damon Cox, whose upcoming documentary showcases the passion and personality driving local pro wrestling. I'm William Crooks. Thanks for listening, and as always, keep your finger on the pulse.